official K-1 podcast, K-1 Battlecast. You'll get news, fight reviews, and fighter interviews. And now, your hosts, Michael Shaverov and Jonathan Scheer.
It's good night, Iran!
Welcome back to this week's Battlecast, everyone. I'm Jonathan Scheer, and I'll be your host today as we go through not the doctor calls, but instead we're going to take a look at the tournament that took place on August 24th at the Nielsen Nelson Gymnasium. That's right, we are talking about the K1 World Grand Prix 2024 in Brasilia, South American qualifier tournament, and what a tournament it was. I'm going to postpone for 1 week our series on the doctor calls, which was 2010's back-to-back victories by the doctor, Giorgio Petrosian. Instead of going into that, I will be covering the Brasilia tournament, and we'll be going over most of those one by one. So let's get into it. First of all, I'm going to start with the third undercard that saw Sakvan Erab from the Netherlands in the blue corner versus Bruno Perna from Team Brazil in the red, I believe. And interestingly, in Arab's corner, he had none other than former four-time K1 World Grand Prix champion, the man, the legend, Semi the Hightower Schilt. Semi, of course, was there for a giant martial arts seminar that was held at the venue where I believe quite a few former K1 greats were in attendance. Now, out of the two fighters, it was Bruno Perna who had the more experience with 26 wins, 5 losses, and 12 of those victories via KO. And Sakvan Arab comes into this at 7-2-1. So he's had 2 losses and 1 draw. But none of his victories have been from KO so far. So that is just setting the stage. And so right off the bat, the two fighters come out and Arab throws a roundhouse kick and Perna scoops it up, then counters with this right cross and a step-up knee and just dumps Arab to the canvas. And he gets an early warning for this violation of K1 rules. You're not supposed to strike after grabbing a leg. And right off the bat, Perna just kind of scooped it up and had his way with Arab. But after the two fighters started trading a few rapid exchanges, Perna looked really strong in the opening few seconds of this first round. And apparently his name means leg. The name Perna means leg in Portuguese. And his kicks really dominated the pace. Now, Arab would continue to absorb the punishment throughout the beginning parts of the first round into the middle. And he would counter with low kicks off the guard. And it seemed like Arab was having a bit of difficulty scoring a lot early in this fight. And Perna was dictating much of the pace. And there was this really interesting spinning back fist to spinning roundhouse kick. I love that combination. Like, a lot of times fighters will miss with the spinning back fist, but if you can extend with that spinning hook kick or a spinning roundhouse kick, you can kind of get a bit more range on that. And, you know, it looked really good. Neither of them connected. But after that, Perna was getting a bit of the hometown love. And out of the two of them, I feel like Perna was really doing a lot more clinching, and he didn't get that many warnings from the judge, despite Arab's protestation. And the first round ended without a lot of fanfare, no clear victor. It seemed like Perna was doing better in the first half of the first round, and Arab kind of picked up pace at the end of the first round. But the second round is where the fireworks really went off, and Arab launched an early jumping knee that completely caught Perna off guard, and he spilled him to the mat. And I don't know, like, I find it really hard to believe that this wasn't counted as a down, because it hit his jaw so perfectly and just dumped him. And Perna was like on shaky legs getting up, but it was ruled a slip. And then Perna started landing a few solid head kicks and a roundhouse kick and a front kick. But Arab started to get this combination. He'd do a 1-2 jab, right cross, and then he would follow up by the low kick. And he just was able to inch Perna into the corner and score a super clean knockdown. And I don't know, this is where the judging kind of, I was like, what? It it was like an 18-second eight count. So I don't know, judges. I really felt you could have done better in this particular match. But after the knockdown, Pernas Pace fell off completely, and Arab was able to launch another impressive jumping knee to knock down the Brazilian. And again, a very generous count by the referee, but I'd say at least it was about a 12-second eight count. And Arab, smelling blood, just launched this frenzied attack against Perna, with the Brazilian setting his heels in and trying to box his way out of danger. But with only 36 seconds left in the second, Arab sank the Brazilian for a third, maybe fourth time, I don't know, to clinch a TKO victory. And that was the prelim fight number three. Now, for the last preliminary fight, the last undercard of the night, we had Lucas Rafael in the blue corner versus Marcos Cavalheiro in the red. And this one was a crazy one. This was one of the few fights where you really think, oh, this guy's winning. He's totally going to take this. I might go to the decision, you know, because the more that the fight goes on, like the more kind of just skewed it gets. And I totally thought that Lucas Rafael was winning this. He had this kind of blue camouflage patch hair thing going on, and he just was a really good counter fighter. He kept punishing Marcos Cavalheiro, who was in the red, from when he came in. And you know, Cavalheiro is trying to box, and each time he moves in, he just keeps eating low kicks and knees from Rafael. And Rafael kicks, Cavalheiro boxes, he fakes a cross, then he eats a bunch of inside kicks and then pops Rafael on the nose in the same place twice. Pop, pop. And like before you realize it, the first round's over. And both fighters go back to their corners and sit down. And because they're doing the cut between round, they go over the highlights of the round. And then they go to the fighters, and you see Carvalho in the red corner, and he's up, he's just normal. And then they pan to Rafael, and his nose is like a garden hose that's been left on, and instead of water gushing out, it's blood. I mean, it's just blood is going everywhere, and they're holding a towel on his face, and you know he's coming out to the he walks out to touch gloves before the second round. They don't start the round. They have him go to the neutral corner, and he's still bleeding, like just gushing blood out of his nose. And I thankfully there weren't any spurts coming out, because like I had no idea. It even looked like he got a cut on the outside of his nose. It was really bad. And he ended up losing the fight on a TKO at the bell. So it was a three minute first round TKO victory, which is kind of it's kind of distinct in my memory. Like I don't know a lot of, I'm sure many have, but I don't know what percentage of fights are stopped after the bell, and it's a TKO. So it was a doctor stop, and it was really sad because Rafael looked so upset. He's like almost crying, but he's walking around with blood just dripping from his face. So it was a very memorable undercard for sure. And with that, the main event started out, and it just got straight into it. One thing I really liked about this event was they had a fantastic production value. They really did a good job on the production, I felt. And the camera shots were, for the most part, like really, really good. And the lighting was fantastic. And I thought the background was great. And the graphics of the lower thirds, the titling that they use to show like the fighter names and what their trunk colors are, like all that is K1 branded like imagery. So it's really cool to see them use that. And so the production value of this is really high. And now we get started with the quarterfinals. And this is, in a sense, where the advantage goes the way of the first few fighters. And the first two tonight were Ariel Machado and Abner Fehia. And these two fighters face one another in the pole position, which is the first round of the quarterfinals, so that they get the most amount of time to relax and to recover between fights. And Ariel Machado, I'm sure you all know, took part in last year's World Grand Prix final here in Tokyo. And at that time, he was knocked out of the running by then-to-be champion Lutsa in the final round, and it remained to be seen if he could secure a return ticket this year to the final. You know, this was his chance to get in a qualifier round, which means he goes directly to December 4th, I believe it is. Or does he have to go to the Osaka qualifier and see if he can win through that? You know, there's a couple of different ways that fighters can get into the final, one of which is to qualify at a world qualifier tournament. So we've had the Eastern Europe world qualifier round. We've also had the Western Europe qualifier tournament. And now we've had the South American qualifier tournament. But at this point in time, nothing's been decided. We still don't know who's won as we go over it. And Ariel Machado, of course, is in the first quarterfinal. So that means he has the maximum amount of time to relax. Okay. And the fights were 3x3 with one extension round in case of a draw. And these two fighters were, the first fight was actually kind of interesting because Abner Ferreira came off of a loss to Machado the last time the two met in the ring. And so he was looking for a little bit of revenge. And Machado, of course, is just trying to make it to this year's final, business as usual. And so Ferreira just comes out aggressive and he's pushing Machado around the ring, tagging him with calf kicks and a low kick to the boys for good measure. And Machado, for the most part, was able to keep up his guard. And he was sniping with roundhouse kicks and low kicks because it just didn't seem he could find the right timing to counter with his hands or find a way to launch combos of his own. And then Ferreira started to box and he was just clubbing Machado with hooks off of both hands, but he ate a counter right. And after the exchange, Ferreira hits Machado flush on the jaw. And for a second, it feels like Machado got wobbled, or maybe it was just an awkward tempo for his legs and they got momentarily tangled. But you got a sense that, oh, wait a second, this could be bad for Machado. But for some reason, Ferreira doesn't press his advantage and Machado steadies himself. And then for the last 30 seconds of the round, an interesting change happens in the distance and timing of Machado's punches. And each time Ferreira tries to punch him, Machado just slips out of range. And you're going to see this multiple times this night where he just gets somebody's distance on the punch and he finds a way to just slip out of the distance and then counter, slip out of the distance, work the body, launch calf kicks, and he gets a really good measurement of his opponent's distance throughout the entire night. And so that was something that would keep playing out. But when Ferreira slips into southpaw and he throws this half-hearted front kick just to kind of maybe press Machado back, but Machado whips this massive roundhouse to Fahia's midsection, and then the two fighters close into box. And in the final seconds of the first round, it feels like it's all Machado. And now Machado's controlling the center, and it's Machado who's pressuring Ferreira and keeping him back on his back foot. But the bell rings, and we head to round two. And so Machado just didn't have a chance to capitalize yet. But that's going to change in round two. Now, Ferreira, he again tries to apply pressure early and the two fighters are trading blows. And then Ferreira starts swinging hard for the ropes. And it's like Machado, he's worked out the distance and he just has to evade just long enough so that the momentum of the attack is spent. And then he goes hunting and he beats Ferreira to an exchange and wobbles him with this beautiful hook off the left hand that just lands right smack on Fahia's face. But then, rather than letting Ferreira recover, Machado follows up. And it's this frenetic exchange of blows, but nothing comes of it. And then out of nowhere, Machado drops this perfect calf kick that drops Ferreira. And he hobbles up to an 8 count. The two go in for another pell-mell. And at the end of a slugfest, again, Machado whips his shin like a bat into Fahia's calf, hobbling him then again. And it's over with 122 in the second round. And Machado goes on to the semis. But Ferreira is disputing it, saying, hey, I didn't quit. And yeah, I mean, you kind of did. And the ref called it, and it's two downs in a round equals a TKO in the quarterfinals. So with that, it was Machado who goes on to the semifinal, number one. And in quarterfinal number two, we had a couple of fighters. One was Jefferson Salviano and Guto Inocente, who has a ton of fights in many of the world's top organizations, both old and new, including Strikeforce, Glory UFC, and ONE. And Inocente is a decent fighter with a good pedigree. And as soon as the fight started, you immediately knew who the fan favorite was, because the crowd was yelling out to their hometown boy, Guto Inocente. And each time Guto made some kind of technique connect, it was like he had sent ambrosia into the crowd. They were delirious. And there was this it was 1 minute and I believe 59 seconds into the first round. Out of nowhere, Inocente does a step-up front kick right to Salviano's liver and just pierces him completely all the way through, almost. I mean, it's almost as if he had to, like, physically remove his foot. And it was this weird samurai movie kind of moment where Salviano just walked forward two steps as if nothing had happened. And it was like, I don't know if you've ever seen that famous Japanese anime clip. I'm really not an anime nerd, but I have seen this clip quite a few times. Fist of the North Star, where that guy is like, "Omae wa sude ni shinderu," and the other guy's like, "Nani?" And he blows up. Well, Salviano, just for a beautiful 2 seconds, I'm sure, did not know what was going on, and then all pain erupted in his midsection, and that was it. The fight was over. And that was the second round quarterfinal that saw Guto Inocente go on to the semifinal as well. So he would be facing Ariel Machado in semifinal number one. So now we go on to quarterfinal number three. That is the showdown between Wesley Cotas from Brazil and also Jaime Moraes from Brazil. Pretty much everyone in this tournament was from Brazil. And this fight was characterized by a ton of wild swings. I really felt like, though, the fighters both had very big hands, I didn't feel that they were the most technically proficient of the night, but very strong, I'm sure. And if either of them gets a solid hit on their opponent, I'm sure they're going down, because all these are very big boys, big gentlemen, and so anything can happen. But between these two, it ended up going to decision. It was basically Cotas that was able to dominate with boxing and his hard-hitting kicks. And he had some really interesting feints. The thing about Cotas was that though his stamina didn't really last, and this fight ended up going to a decision, so that's 9 minutes of stamina burnt right there, that he had really proficient kicks. Kind of like Konta Malang, who fought against Ali Badawi in the K1 World Grand Prix, Western Europe qualifying round, who was really good off of his kicks. And so Wesley Cotas had a really similar fight style, and he was able to just do these really interesting knee feints. He was feinting to a knee, but then he would just whip out a crazy middle kick, and actually kind of made Jaime Moraes suffer a bit for this 9 minutes. But because they spent the entire round fighting, Wesley Cotas was in pretty bad shape when he went into quarterfinal number two. And in round four of the quarterfinals, we had Johnny Clever in the blue corner versus Anderson Braddock, who is also known as Anderson Silva. But Braddock is trained out of the famed Chakuriki Gym under Tom Herrick, and has also fought out of a bunch of different organizations, including its Showtime, ONE, Glory. He's a K-1 fighter as well, and has some wins over some big names in K-1's history. He was also a sparring partner for Peter Ertz, but he's fought such greats as Stefan Leko, Freddy Camayo, and he's fought Katalin Morosanu, Gokhan Saki, Daniel Gita, Remy Bonyaski, and Badr Hari. And so he comes into the ring with a ton of experience against some big names. And, I thought that the fight would go just clearly in Anderson Braddock's direction. But I was surprised because even though the fighters came out with guns blazing, I mean, they were really, really trying to knock each other out early in the first round. They went at it nonstop for pretty much the full 3 minutes of the first round. But then they were realizing, okay, I'm not going to knock this guy out. They didn't seem to be landing the punches on the button. And so they slowed down in the second round. And that's pretty much the pinnacle of this fight was in the first round, because they just burnt through all of their stamina reserves. And they ended up having to like trade a few punches and then back off and bide some time. And then at one point, Clever has dialed in his distance with Braddock, and he's launches maybe 5-6 jabs in a row that just keep frustrating Braddock from coming forward. Can't make it a step forward. And then somehow he closes the distance. But yeah, I mean, there was a moment there where Clever just basically had Braddock stopped in his place, and then they clash again, and somehow their timing coincides, and they smack each other in the face, and then Braddock was hitting to the body and using uppercuts to break through Clever's guard, but Clever struck back, and his jabs just kept frustrating Braddock's attempts to close distance, and both fighters were totally winded at this point, and their hands were hanging. They were basically trying to just bait one another into range so that they could launch a counter. But in the end, it would be Braddock who somehow came away with the split decision win over Clever. And I honestly think it could have been an extra round because it was just so close. But I wonder what kind of a fight it would have been if both fighters were just a little bit lighter, because they had great hands, but they just struggled to maintain their pace. And there were a couple of occasions that the referee had to give a warning for them to pick up the pace, or otherwise there would be a deduction of points. So it would have been nice had the fighters maybe been a little bit lighter, or had trained a little bit earlier, or I don't know. I'm sure they were doing the best they can, and we'll just leave it there. But okay, so then there was a super fight in between the quarterfinals and the semifinals, and this was between Facu Suarez from Argentina and Enzo Martinez from Bolivia. And this was fought at catchweight, which was interesting to me because it's an agreed-upon non-standard weight. Although for this fight, they both came up to 60 kilograms, or one was coming down, the other one was going up. Actually, unfortunately, Martinez came in at 62.7 kilograms, which was over the agreed-upon weight, and he had to receive either one of two deductions, which I'm not sure about. I got two different sources of information. One, which was Wikipedia, everyone's favorite, said a two-point deduction. And then, actually, when I listened to the fight, they were saying a three-point deduction, 1 point for each round. So I think two would have been more than enough, because if you look at the end result, it was pretty much Martinez's job to perform the entire fight. He was at a 2-point to 3-point deficit off the bat. So that means he had to win by KO or at least drop Suarez, twice, right, to have any chance of winning. So like once in each round, and it just didn't seem that was going to be possible, because Suarez was a great boxer and really, really tight boxing skills. So I found this fight just to be so much fun, and it was so technical, and they came out so quickly, like speed-wise, but also just early. The first kick that was thrown was at the 1 second mark. And then they just went at it from there, which is, I guess I'm a real big fan of welterweight and under fighters, because there's just so much action and so much technical ability. And I just really enjoyed this fight as a nice kind of palate cleanser, or, a break from the heavyweights for just a little bit. You know, all the love in the world to the heavyweights. When it goes great, it goes great. But that last fight kind of dragged on. So, okay, great. We got this fantastic fight between two 60 kilogram and under fighters. And Suarez from Bolivia. He just showed such great hands throughout the fight. He had great head movement, and the timing of his counters was just awesome. And there was this point where he went full Neo around Martinez's punches, just weaving in between them. And then he just launched right hooks of his own, and he was launching left hooks and checks. Martinez, on the other hand, had some great front leg roundhouse kicks to the middle and scored with some step-up knees, but Suarez somehow just found the right moment to counter to the body, and then he'd finish with these low kicks right to the meaty section of Martinez's thigh. And from round one until basically round three, it was pretty much Suarez that just kept hitting home with his hands, hitting to the liver, following up with the right overhand hook and snapping Martinez's head back. And Martinez tried throughout the fight to overpower Suarez, continually pushing him back. But he just couldn't prevent the Argentinian from countering with his hands. And whenever knees to the body were thrown by Martinez, it would be hooks to the head by Suarez, hooks to the body by Martinez, and then hooks off the left hand to the liver and then the head by Suarez. And it was just this really super high-stakes game of tag. And despite the difference in height and weight, just the counters from the hands of Suarez kept hitting their mark. It was a left jab, a right uppercut, a left uppercut, then a right hook. All of his shots landed squarely on the target, and he had some severe skills in the sweet science, and it really paid off in the first round. And it just felt like Martinez gassed out at the end of the first. But then Martinez came back with a little bit renewed vigor in the second round. And again, the two fighters had their first exchange within 1 second of the bell. Now, it was in this round that Martinez tried to box a bit more, and he mixed up some head kicks and still just kept pressing forward, constantly keeping Suarez moving backward. But after each kick, Suarez countered. After each knee, Suarez countered. After every hook, Suarez countered with either a low kick or his peekaboo hooks and uppercuts. And again, just tilting his head to the side to avoid Martinez's punches and then countering right over the top with his overhand rights. It was truly sublime. And the two fighters embraced right before the third round to show everyone that they had developed this camaraderie. And I think there was a tremendous amount of respect between the two fighters. And then it was just this blitz from the both of them for another 3 minutes. And I would say that the third round seemed to go the way of Martinez, but Suarez definitely controlled the pace of the fight in the first two rounds. And he just seemed to connect more with his punches. And really the only way that Martinez could have won, because he was just so far behind on points, either 2 or 3 point deduction. Plus, I feel like Suarez took round one and two. At least, at the very least, he tied all three rounds. And that alone would lead to a victory. So it was just too much of a deficit to overcome. But a really, really cool fight between both of them. And at this point, you know, the two fighters congratulate each other. They leave the ring, and the camera pans to Peter Aerts. So it looks like Peter Aerts was also in attendance, another legend in the house. So now we get semifinal number one, and both of the fighters make their way to the ring. It is Ariel Machado versus Guto Inocente, and both came off of KO wins in the quarterfinal. And ultimately, because of the fickle nature of the tournament, this fight ended up being the de facto final of the night. And you're going to find out why a little bit later. But suffice to say, it was last year's representative for South America in the World Grand Prix, Ariel Machado, who is actually the 2023 WGP kickboxing light heavyweight champion. And he's faced up against Guto Inocente, who was the 2019 WGP kickboxing super heavyweight champion, and that's the 94 kilograms and up. So in this sense, it was also a showdown between the heavyweights and the super heavyweights. And the fight just got off to a crazy start, and the crowd was obviously rooting for their home favorite, Guto Inocente. But in a brief moment of, I don't know, forgetfulness, Guto Inocente must have forgot which discipline he was fighting in, because he does this snapping sidekick to Ariel's knee, which may be allowed in MMA, but definitely not K1. And Ariel's like, "What are you doing, man?" And Inocente is like, "Oh, I'm sorry." And the two touch gloves, and then started to fight. And each time Innocente hit home, the crowd was going crazy. And I'm sure that Machado was feeling a lot of heat early in this fight. And then Guto pumped his front leg, feigning, and then whipping it forward, hoping to score a low kick on Machado's back leg. But he ended up aiming a bit low and connecting with Machado's human resource department. So this fight was getting off to a bit of an awkward start. Now the two touch gloves and resume the fight, quickly finding a good rhythm. They were trading shots, and then again, Innocente connects downstairs, and Ariel gives him this look like, dude, are you serious? And again, Innocente apologizes, and then Innocente tries a head kick, because obviously he doesn't quite have the range down for low kick, but then he tries for a low kick, and Machado comes inside to box, and Innocente gets him caught in this bear hug of sorts. It was kind of weird. Innocente was caught off guard by the suddenness of Machado's counter and goes in for a clinch. And then Innocente separates again, and he's able to back up, get some distance with front kicks, kind of frustrating Machado just a little bit, but slowly, inch by inch, Innocente gets backed into the corner. And then Machado unloads on him with punches. And again, Innocente clinches to escape. The two fighters are separated by the referee, and Ariel charges in, hitting Innocente flush three times in a row and stuns him. And Innocente's knees just buckle. He falls back on the ropes, and he jerks back onto his feet, getting up just in time to block Machado's next attack. And then Machado lands these two crazy body shots, and Innocente jerks. The first one makes him just completely jerk off his feet. And then the second one knocks his legs out from under him. And Innocente just spasms. And then Ariel kind of hooks behind his head and pulls him down. And he's paid the down. So a lot of fighters, I'm noticing, they hook behind their opponent's head when they've stunned him or have him off balance. And they can't keep their balance, and they dump him to the canvas. So that's what Ariel did here. But he was paid the down, and Innocente gets up. There are 33 seconds left, and Innocente is hurt. And so after the eight count, you've got 25 seconds left. Machado just bull rushes in, and Innocente has to shell up. And this is actually where Machado does him a favor, because he gets so wrapped up in knocking him over that he actually gets caught up with Innocente, and they both fall down, which, okay, I'm sure it takes energy, and maybe it actually hurts, because like to get totally bodied that way, I'm sure it would be painful, but at least he has eight more seconds to recover. And then Machado charges in again, hoping to finish it off, but Innocente clinches, and the momentum kind of spills both fighters onto the canvas, which gives Innocente even more time. So this is the third time in a row that he's been given 8 seconds here, 8 seconds there. They both get up. Machado, so desperate to finish it, gets over to Innocente just as the bell rings. And somehow Innocente has survived the most insane 33 seconds of K1 history. I mean, I can't state for certain, but it was pandemonium, and how amazing that Guto Innocente survives that round. He's totally spent. He goes back to his corner. He can hardly breathe. He can't do anything but just stand there and breathe. And by the time the second round has come around, Innocente comes to the center, and it's Machado who's just languidly strolling out. It's all on his time, not a single rush in the world. And Innocente is quickly pressured to the corner again, and Machado starts off the round with a jab. Innocente goes into southpaw. He kicks in Machado's midsection. He feints, and Machado fires off this flurry of wild punches, and he finishes with a powerful roundhouse kick of his own. Then Innocente goes back to orthodox, circling around his left, and again Machado throws this haymaker off the right, falls with this wild, high-floating hook off the left hand that almost looks like the swipe from a cat's paw, just this like cat's paw, bam. Then he uppercuts with the right, and again with that looping overhand left. And Innocente is like trying to throw roundhouse kicks from southpaw. He keeps backing up, and then his his foot hits the canvas and it's like his legs just buckle and he's hanging onto the ropes for dear life. And it's only been 20 seconds in the round. And Machado comes in to batter Inocente, but somehow Inocente escapes. He gets this desperate clinch only to eat a knee to the sternum, and Machado is on the attack, but Inocente flees to the left and he heads to the neutral corner and he's still on shaky legs, and Machado pops Inocente on the face and just, he's making this bigger fighter just jerk as he whacks him, and then they get into another clinch, and Inocente is just surviving clinch to clinch. He is trying to get through this. And Inocente just, now he goes back to the red corner and Machado hunts him down. And he's like a bloodhound or just, you know, a ring wraith or a crazy in-law or just something. And he, when Machado closes in, Inocente clinches and then he circles to the outside and he just bodies Machado to the ropes. And the ref separates them, and Inocente just keeps backing up, and this time he's in the blue corner, and Machado just goes headhunting, and he lands this powerful overhand right, then a jab, and Inocente goes into clinch again, but Machado slips out of it, and the two change places like a tango, and still Inocente just keeps backing up, and now he's trapped in the corner, and Machado starts raining on him, only to get caught in another clinch. And I'm sorry, but it was a pretty clinchy match. I would like to say that Inocente really stretched the limits of K1's clinch to the max. And he got off lucky because he didn't get a warning. And, you know, anyways, so the two continue. And now at this point, it's been about 3 minutes straight of Machado chasing his prey. 2 minutes in the last round, or sorry, 1 minute in the last round, and then 2 minutes in this one. And now he's looking to be in trouble because around 1:15 left in round two, Machado starts breathing really hard and he's starting to wobble on his feet. And the two fighters engage a few more times in this round, but both of them are now starting to flag. And Machado gets a few more hits in, which I'm sure scored points, but at this point, there just was no gas behind them. And then something kind of funny happened with 20 seconds left in the round. Inocente throws this front kick, and Machado dances back. He's got the range really dialed in now, and Machado nods like to say, "Hey, come on, man, why don't you try that again?" And Inocente is like, "Okay, I'll..." And then he just gets smacked in the face because Ario totally breaks the rhythm and just pops Inocente, who's stunned for a split second. It was kind of funny. And no offense to Inocente, but that moment really made me laugh because the two were just really exhausted at that point. And I think that was Machado just being creative, but it scored a point. And it was really funny. Then, with 12 seconds left, Machado blasts Inocente with a straight right that buckles his legs and sends him stumbling back into the ropes. And then he follows up with a left hook that bludgeons Inocente. Machado throws another left, and just in time, Inocente's hands come up, and somehow he has survived another late round assault. And this fantastic fight goes into the third round, and from the bell, both fighters race to get to center ring. Machado strikes with a calf kick. Inocente counters with the right, sending Machado back on unsteady legs. The two fighters get their distance, make fine corrections. Then Machado hits Inocente again. And at this point, it seems like Machado has his hands completely dialed in. And though he's not connecting heavy, he's connecting. And Inocente can only back up and kick from time to time. But then Inocente finds his range on a few left check hooks, and by then Inocente is on his last fumes of stamina, and the two have a number of exchanges, and Inocente desperately tries to hold his ground. But Machado forces him to retreat again with his superior boxing skills, and with around 30 seconds left on the clock, and neither fighter seeming to have any kind of advantage to press, Machado tries to bait Inocente into a brawl. But when the two do exchange, Inocente clips Machado and sends him wobbling for the next 10 seconds. And now it's Machado who's basically trying to survive. And just the back and forth in this match was amazing. I can't believe that Inocente survived the first round, not to mention the second round. But the turn of events at the end of the third round, this was a nail-biter to the finish. I loved this fight. And the good thing is, it's not... It was one of the best nights fights of the night. But the next one was interesting as well. It just completely changed everything to this other kind of crazy dynamic. And so we had this very highly technical fight on the one hand between Machado and Inocente, and then we had this chaotic slugfest in semifinal number two. So the next fight was between Wesley Cotas and Anderson Braddock. And this fight was more typical of the open weight fights that I'm used to. Whereas the fight between Inocente and Machado was a lot more technical, this one was just two huge dudes trying to erase one another. And the two fighters just went in swinging with all their mass behind their strikes. And both of these guys are huge, both in height and girth. And they were swinging for the rafters each time they tried to connect. And you knew from the beginning that this was not going to be a showdown of skill. It was going to be a standoff of strength. And by most of the blows going wild, you knew it wasn't going to be a technical fest. And it was just, there was very little control being shown. It was just 100% aggression. And then of the two, Cotas seemed to be landing more with his kicks, and Braddock seemed to be finding more openings for his punches. But there were a ton of errant blows, and fists were flying wild, and kicks were going akimbo. And Braddock landed a few really heavy shots, but he just struggled to maintain his pace. And because he was gassing out, he started lowering his guard, which let Cotas come in and deal some decent strikes. With seconds left on the clock, Braddock goes for it in the first round, landing some heavy shots on Cotas, but it's over. And it's hard to be sure, but I think that Braddock slightly outscores Cotas in the first round, and he was the more aggressive, and so maybe he scores better, but it could be an even round. Now, the second round sees Cotas bring in more boxing, and just like in his quarterfinal match, Braddock keeps getting tagged by jabs. Johnny Clever just kept keeping Braddock at range with his jabs, and Cotas is doing a very similar thing here. But Braddock is biding his time, and he slowly corners Cotas, and he just lets loose the artillery. Cotas keeps backing up, but then he stifles Braddock, and he starts ripping these kicks off the lead leg to the head to the body. And Braddock moves in. He eats a knee to the body, but he keeps stalking Cotas. And he takes a high kick on the forearms, but still keeps stalking. And he's able to counter off a couple of Cotas's kicks. But the bell rings, and Braddock goes to his own corner, which is actually right there, which is an interesting moment. You realize, you know, if you can end the round in your corner, you don't have to walk back to the other corner. So, yeah, that was an interesting inside trick by Braddock there in the second round. So both of the fighters are breathing really hard at this point. And I once had the opportunity to talk with Peter Graham many years ago, and this was right before his upcoming fight with Semi Schilt. And he said something to me that I would never forget. He said, Nicholas Pettis told him to work on cardio, and it totally changed his fighting. And this is advice that both these gentlemen could live by. Cardio, gentlemen. Cardio. And the round begins again, and Cotas starts by coming in with kicks, but then he tries to box, and this is the moment that Braddock has been waiting for. And Braddock counters with a right hook that misses, but lands with a solid liver punch off the left hand, then goes for the head, whiffs. But Cotas jumps up like everything's cool, let's go, and then folds to the canvas. Again, the liver. Now, referee Onari counts a proper 8 count. We got 8 seconds. I timed it. And then the two close again. And Braddock is so close to the kill, he can smell it. And he starts coming in, hands heavy. But Cotas shells, and he counters with low kicks and shoots for a jumping knee, only to eat a stiff left hook. But he shakes it off, and he comes in with kicks. And try as he might, Braddock cannot seem to connect again to the body of Cotas, and now the younger fighter seems to have shaken it off. And interestingly, Cota uses the ropes to gain a bit of momentum off of this counter, and he springs into this counteroffensive with the jumping knee, and now he's the one on the attack, and he's cornering Braddock. But the veteran digs in with his heels and he presses forwards and he takes a shot after shot as he moves in just to get to his distance. And with 50 seconds left, Braddock aims for the body again. 40 seconds left, Braddock aims for the body. 30 seconds left, it's all one way. Braddock is aiming for the head. 20 seconds left, the two fighters are pretty much dead on their feet right now, but Kota somehow finds a way to throw a punch, and it's aimed at the back of Braddock's head, and the older fighter just kind of staggers away, desperate to catch his breath. 10 seconds left, and the two are like lurching undead. Their limbs are flailing. They're like zombies, just trying with all of their might to just score one more hit at the end of the round. Somehow they made it to the bell, and it goes to the decision. And because Braddock knocked down his foe, he wins by decision. But here's the catch. Anderson Braddock is injured, or he's either that or he's so exhausted that he can't continue to the finals. But wait, Wesley Cottis is also injured, and he can't continue to fight in the final either. So who does it come down to? Well, none other than Johnny Clever, who, true to his name, must be the most tricky guy out there that night, because somehow he's made it to the final round after losing the quarterfinal. So now it is a Machado versus Clever showdown in the finals. And we had two fights in the interim. I'm not going to go into them. It was between Teodoro Ruiz from Paraguay and the Brazilian Cabelo Monteiro, who you might remember. He came to Japan on July 7th and he fought with Yokoyama, and then in the end, this fight is a split decision in favor of Ruiz from Paraguay over the Brazilian fighter Monteiro. But okay, that was a decent fight. Then another fighter who was there on July 7th, who fought as a reserve fighter, and you may know him as the other tallest fighter in K1 World Max history, aside from Dengue Silva. That's right, it was Petros Cabellinho, and Cabellinho, of course, lost to Sergio Sanchez in the reserve fight, and Petros went on to win this fight via TKO in the third round, so he got some spiritual revenge for his last fight. And now we move on to the final between Ariel Machado and Johnny Clever, spelled with a K. And so first of all, this fight broke with convention because both of the semifinalists on the other side were unable to continue. And rather than have Jaime Moraes fight Johnny Clever, they went on to fight the final. And Machado agreed, so the fight went forward. And the fighters came out, they touched gloves, and the round started. And right away, Clever came out of the gate and started trading punches with Machado. And Machado lands a heavy calf kick. They trade some blows, another heavy calf kick. But Clever is still able to box, and moving slowly backwards, Machado just lashes out with jabs. So it's now it's Clever who's pressing the attack, and Machado, the shorter fighter, is kind of, he's lashing out with jabs to stop the forward momentum. And Machado is getting the better of more exchanges. And each time Clever tries to come in, Machado slightly outpaces him, and he's swinging for the bleachers for Machado's head, but Machado just gets out of range. And after a minute of this, it's pretty clear that Clever is having a bit of trouble moving in. He can swing in place, but something is keeping him stationary. There's 1 minute left, and again, Machado chops at the calf with a low kick, and Johnny tries to move forward, and it looks like he almost trips, and he is wobbling, and there's something clearly wrong with this calf. Machado is just biding his time. Chop! Clever somehow inches Machado to the ropes and throws haymakers, but Machado dances off the ropes, just biding his time. Machado deeks. He throws Clever off balance by the sudden redirection, and again, he looks like Clever is about to fall over. And now Machado is stalking. Clever tries to lure Machado in and connects to the body, but it's just not enough. And then chop. The two end the round without any significant developments. Machado heads back to his corner with a spring in his step. And Clever walks back to his corner with lead in his. And actually, he mistakenly heads four extra steps toward the neutral corner. And that mistake is in his present condition is going to cost him 8 extra steps on that damaged leg. Round two starts, chop again to the lead leg. And Clever is desperately trying to get that leg out of harm's way. And at one moment, he stumbles forward really hard and he's getting up on shaky legs, but it's not ruled a down, it's ruled a slip. But there's only so much more damage that he's going to be able to take. Chop, chop, two more calf kicks, but Clever checks them, leaving him flat-footed to a flurry of punches, but better than getting that leg hit. Machado then comes in for a flying knee and just gets dumped hard onto the canvas by Clever. But Machado gets up and then chop. Clever tries to counter with big swings, but Machado is just out of range. Chop. Clever somehow checks it. Machado throws a straight right and a right when Clever puts his guard up. Chop again to the calf, that front leg. And the calf is so tender now, it's about ready to put on the barbecue. And to Clever's credit, he's still standing. And more often than not, when Machado comes in, he's giving his aggressor pause by using his fist to counter. Now, Machado, perhaps frustrated momentarily, tries for some clinching knees and is warned by ref Onari against holding. Machado is able to corner Johnny and chop, hits the leg, boxes, then chop. Machado is hitting the calf from both inside and outside, just punishing Clever mercilessly. Clever tries to box, but Machado has him just where he wants him and is dismantling his defense with uppercuts, hooks to the body, all while chop, chop, chopping at that front leg. And I'm surprised the ref didn't jump in just because there are about 20 seconds of unanswered shots while Clever just turtles up in the corner. And it's completely open season for Machado, but somehow Clever is able to last out the round. And in the very last second, Machado scores one last kick to that calf for good measure. Referee Onari comes over to Clever's corner, and I thought for sure he was going to check on him and just says, "Hey, are you okay to continue?" But actually, he just came over to warn Clever to stop clinching. Clever is breathing hard through his mouth, and his face contorts with a grimace, and he is clearly hurting. Round three, again, Machado corners Clever, and after hounding him around the ring for 48 seconds, chopping at that leg, Machado gets his first paid down, and Clever's face is a mask of pain. He's clearly in pain, and he's suffering, but he raises his hands. He wants to fight. 1:39 left on the clock. Clever is on the ropes. He gets caught by a left. He falls a second time. He makes it up one more time, but thankfully, referee Onari steps in and calls the fight over when it's clear Johnny Clever's body can no longer support his heart. Which means that for 2 years in a row, Ariel Machado makes it to Japan for the K1 World Grand Prix Final here in Japan this December. And what a truly amazing night of fighting at the beautiful Nilson Arena in Brasilia. Congratulations to Ariel Machado for his victory. And that, ladies and gentlemen, was the 2024 World Grand Prix in South American qualifying round. I probably have that completely wrong. I believe it actually is the K1 World Grand Prix 2024 in Brasilia, South American qualifier tournament. And what a tournament it was. We look forward to welcoming Mr. Machado here to Tokyo come December. It's a lot to look forward to. And that was the tournament, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you enjoyed it. Gosh, that was a long show. I can't believe I've been talking for 53 minutes straight. Hopefully many of you are still listening. Overall, it was a 5-hour event and it was massively exciting and entertaining throughout. I watched all 5 hours just for you, and I curated some of the most interesting moments to me personally. I hope you enjoyed it. And I hope you will join us for the continuation of our series, The Doctor Calls, which goes over the 2010 K1 World Max back-to-back victory by Giorgio Petrosian. And as I probably mentioned in the intro, it's been hours ago, so I have completely forgotten. But I could not find the fight between Michal Golgowski and Yoshihiro Sato. So we're going to move on to the semifinals from next week. But we do have those, I've confirmed. So a lot of really fun left in that series. But I'm going to try to finish it up maybe next week. And we will move on to other things. But until then, wishing you a wonderful week. And please check out our socials, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of those. Have a great week, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you next time.